And I'm telling you, coming behind my good friend, Harry Sky Campbell, I mean, he is so hilarious. As president of the Eugene B. Redmond Writers Club for the last 10 years, we've done a lot of really exciting things, and it's been great working with Eugene Redmond, who came back to this area about 12 or 13 years ago. I worked with some wonderful writers as a result of having been president of the Writers Club, or just being a member and a founding member at that of the Writers Club. But it's always good to get out and see my friends and read my work. So I say to you, and I want you to say to me, Ashe.
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 Welcome in the spirit of usness. The first piece I'm going to do is from Drum Voices Review. As Michael told you, I am associate editor of this magazine. It's published by the Writers Club and Southern Illinois University. The first piece is Moving On. And I wrote this after my divorce, thinking about the things that women go through when we make transitions. And then after I wrote the poem, I realized that it was about more than just moving from being a married person to a single person. It's about making transitions or changes in your life, whatever that may be, at whatever stage, for old people, young people, healthy people, wealthy people, whatever. Moving on. Packed up feelings, furniture, and fragile memories jammed in tight against giving in, against caving in, let go, given up, violet remnants, dusty love humming home, ritual passions, moving on behind boxed leftovers, lassoed loose ends, a care-wrapped heart on down road ready to the unpack. Unbox, unwrap a portable and treasured salvages. Gleaming with fresh courages and fresh fires, and from leftovers build new foundations in my own ample Egypt. Some antiquity, some future staring back through pyramidal dreams. Moving on, moving on. The next piece is Evolution, and tonight there will be a tapestry, a weaving of love. February is the love month, you know, and about history, because every day we live, the next day we look back at history, about cherishing our tradition and our heritage. Evolution is about love. I catch dimple, dark design, flooding your face. I glow. Fuse in your funky grace. I open. Hail the birth of your care-coded favor. I rekindle. Phantom the prideful challenge. In your tendered eyes, I answer. Await your ritual bidding. I ache. Clamor for your claim, touching hands, I flush. No lust, rich, emergent of need, I hunger, hunger. Hear drums, summer from your chest, I tremble, tremble. Relish the solar surge of your sensual light, I soar, inhale the spice of your flesh, still embrace. I respond, simmer in the juice flames of your sweat raining loins. I am fulfilled. Haiku. Moving on to another subject. Haiku. Breeding blooms of heavy hate by day. The clan tree bore strange fruit by night. And this is in tribute to an ancestor, Malcolm X. And the title is Malcolmorphosis. And I won't talk about Malcolm X because if you haven't seen the movie, haven't read the book, haven't read all of the articles or the little fight between Spike Lee and Amir Baraka, then you won't know who Malcolmorphosis is, and you won't know who Malcolm X is anyway. Malcolmorphosis. Gone, gone, Omaha's Malcolm, littled into Detroit red, and like a loose caterpillar, peacock Detroit and Harlem slum bushes, Detroit and Harlem slum bushes, you loved foulness, foul love, on your sedimental journey to a predestined still cocoon, predestined still cocoon, where Elijah Muhammad sent soul unfolding missives that bullseyed your consciousness and precipitated Malcolmorphic struggle. Malcolmorphic struggle. A Muslim war moth emerged and mobilized against the white devil. Malcolm X unsettling disbelievers with black powered freedom flapping. You pride painted a fresh Afro-centered rainbow about ebon shoulders. In Africa's embrace, you were Mecca transformed. Mecca transformed into a boldly caligenous butterfly fluttering tall wings of self-respect. El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, you look beyond the hue. The hue to the man, look beyond hue to the man. Once found, took him in without fear of the end. You stood heart deep in a reclaimed unity and ministered in a sepia human field, defying Mohammed's tenet. A griot prophet who wagered life, on steel bronze and satin white, you were mounted for exhibition February 12, 1965. Fire frozen alive. Fire frozen alive. The next piece is one that was on display on the Metrolink cars and some of the buses last year between the months of April and June. It's one of the projects that the Writers Club has been involved in with Washington U's International Writing Center and the bi-state transit system called ArtLink. And just about a month ago, we had a reading at Washington U of all of the authors who were displayed in this past year, and the artists, the writers who were from the public domain were represented by some of the members of the International Writers Center. This particular piece is entitled Black Bridge Blues. Midnight train crossing the Black Bridge make me feel awful sad. I say that train crossing the Black Bridge make me feel awful sad. Start me to thinking about the only love I ever had. When that whistle gets to ooh ooh and I feel lonesome as can be, I say that mocking whistle makes me lonesome as can be. Signifying about when it took my East St. Louis man from me. The rumbling of the Black Bridge obliged me to weep and moan. I say that Black Bridge rumbling oblige me to weep and moan. Old memories rise up to haunt me, making a graveyard of my home. Black Bridge train clickety-clacking, bring my East St. Louis man back to me. Old midnight train clickety-clacking, bring my lover man back to me. Revive my lifeless home, save me from chronic misery. Cause with my man here to groove on, I'll be free. I'll be free. I'll be free. And from Break Word with the World, which is another publication that the Writers Club do, well, every year we do a reading and we invite poets from the area to come and share their views on the media and how it isolate and really do not give full hearing to certain segments of society. And out of that reading, we publish Break Word with the World. We've done this now for 5 years, so I'm reading from Break Word with the World 3. This particular piece is dedicated to my grandmother. She is 95 years old. And one time I went down to visit her in Jackson, Tennessee, and we were sitting around talking, and she was talking about the work that she used to do in her younger days. She was a midwife. And so when I got back home, I was thinking about it, and I said, well, I want to do something in tribute to her, because that whole thing is coming back. Now I do have a friend who's I'm into midwifery, and so it's good to see that happening again. And this piece is entitled Grandmother Recalls Her Work for Lorraine. They paid me $3 or $4, you know, sometimes a sack of flour or a boat of cloth, or nothing but a tight hug and thanks. Any hour, day or night, any weather, they came by foot or wagon. There wasn't no doctors to call on either, but these hands never lost a babe. Oh, now we're gonna shift the tempo a little bit. This piece is entitled Petty Mall or Small Death. Solar bodies interlocking, becoming, coming one, a black hole in the wake of a Hiroshima explosion, disintegrating reserve and unloosing saber-tongue ecstasy as they reveled in the petty mall, relished the consummate fall into tendered stillness. And another haiku entitled Erotic Harvest. Like corn ripened gold by rain glow of sun, she was waiting to be shucked. On that same bent, I will read Detour. My tantalizing terrain fleshed magically before their eyes and drawing attention like neon transcript toward the physiology of my exquisite garden, the private zone of blackberry crown mounds and full sensual curves into the hum of Snug Valley adorned with wiry black foliage and streams of lemon juice. They want to come in the quicksand of juju passion to burn tongue trails through the rhythm of flesh forest, but I have erected barriers to my womb-scape, my joy-scape, waiting for his drum voice to call. Shifting a bit again, this piece, I was looking at a TV program on the Justice Files the other night, and they were saying that in most recent statistics, 72% of all Americans are in favor of capital punishment, and that it costs from $2 to $6 million to execute one person, which is 2 to 4 times more than to maintain that one person for life in prison. And since 1900, One in every four convictions for murder have been overturned upon appeal. So that make you wonder, you know, about this whole thing of execution. This piece is entitled Transformed, and it's for Gervais Davis, who was executed on May 17, 1995. Sow belly of a boy, never a decipher of word or the world, never a guest of stable home or haven, never a consumer of care-filled arms or biased bosom, found larceny his only path to diurnal bread. When lucid vision quickened, consciousness awakened, and willingness to accede manifested, he already had a sentence punctuated by death. Barred by steel, the avowed transform ticked off remaining days. Silk purse of a man familiar with the omnipotent, daft in letter and word, surfed the internet, speeded down the information highway, seeking an email pardon, only to be detoured into the cold death sack to atone for past mistakes. The revolt. Because his eyes no longer spoke to her, and love buffet featured passion de residue, and intimate time collapsed to seconds, and promises became impacted with truth decay, she seceded from the union. Trimmed Hedges Blues. This is another blues piece. It's kind of fun, but it's deadly serious. Trimmed my hedges with soul stroke. Said it was the only gig for you. Yeah, you manicured them, baby, and watched how they grew. With barehanded tending, you trained them what to do. Now it's sounding on the wind, hedges looking greener in other yards. Oh, it's howling on the wind, they're looking greener in other yards. Now that you're freelancing, my bare stems are quivering oh so hard. Been trimming other hedges, keeping them all shaped up so fine. Yeah, you've been cutting up, bringing only dull shears to mine. Ain't no wonder, baby, why caution snipped your mind. Well, you won't be trimming my hedges without a rubber glove on your hand. No, you won't be pruning around my hedges without safe cover, understand? Cause pesticides can't even cure the mean plague moving across this land. The next piece I wrote because I went skating with a girlfriend of mine. I had started skating, I guess, about a year before, and I convinced her that it was a good thing to do because, you know, we have to stay in shape and we have to keep our legs together and et cetera, et cetera. So she agreed to go skating with me, and we were going to have a great time. Well, the second time out, she fell and broke her arm. Well, needless to say, that was the last time she went skating with me. But I wrote this poem in tribute to my girlfriend, Toni Brown. It's called Crossovers. Conspicuous as a green goose intruding on seasoned swans, she tottered on rented wheels locked on beige high-top skates with snaking red shoelaces while others bounced in sync with the beat, envying their agility. Her zigzagging thoughts muffled Frankly Beverly and Maze, weaving rap and rapture into 60s melodies to control rebellious feet. Lifting right foot over left, she defies gravity to turn corners. Each crossover is reminiscent of physical and mental pauses. Diverse debris hugging the floor fascinates her eyes. like Miss Corrine. She scans the palm, reading a route to escape pitfalls and cares. Resting vigor from velvet sleep deep within bones, she recalls a matriarch once saying, "Legs are the first to go." Disturbed muscles release cacophonous curses against attempts to stay dazed, rolling over her like precision skates on frozen silk. A seizure of exertion fixes her smile as she collapses against the railing and gasps. Midlife crisis is a bitch. Yes, I want to read this one little poem entitled Love Lines. And it's to the newly born and the yet to be born. They ignite in lusty flames, smelting separate threads, tangible love lines, explore cogent bonds, quivering dual mountains, trembling bluffs, throbbing liquid cavern, reaching the source, the blood river merging Ethiopia and East St. Louis, taming the flesh fires, baptizing the solar seed in connubial demise, replenishing our lineage. In East St. Louis, when I was growing up, there was a young man named Bobby McClure. He became somewhat famous for singing along with Fontella Bass and singing with Oliver Sane's music group. He eventually moved out to Los Angeles, and I hadn't seen Bobby in many years, and then one day I was reading the paper, only to discover that he had died. Well, when I was growing up, he used to sing with this group, a singing group, and they rehearsed next door to where I grew up, and I used to go out and listen to them. And he was such a small young man. Everyone else in the singing group were grown, but he had such a powerful voice that you couldn't help but be drawn to that porch as they were rehearsing. So I wrote this poem in memory of Bobby McClure, who died in November of 1992. Was it arc of morning or core of night when your vitality fused with every gospel blues note ever played or mouth, increasing the astral score? Fluid sounds of your now frozen voice box that form music before you walk still bathes me in remembering. At 13, you merged Sam Cooke and gospel tones as lead singer in the Spirit of Illinois. I recall you rehearsing, soon one morning, death come creeping at the door. In a tattered white shirt that didn't obscure your style or your presence. We were clueless to the whirling fortunes that brought hit recordings, Fontella's Muse, Sane Sax, and the City of the Seraphim into your East St. lyric domain. Don't mess up a good thing hit more than charts. Now your glazed eyes peek from under headline, dies at 50, to find and pull me back to that time on that back porch. Ladies, have you ever gone hunting? No. Well, she's got a valid question. There are lots of ways you can hunt. And I'm going to talk about at least two of them. The first one is where you go in the woods and you be quiet and you wait for the deer to come. And it's entitled Woodland Paradox, and it's from the Woodland series. Hunting spined his life and gave me entree to this male right. My Gucci and Jones New York couldn't dazzle on this wooded runway where Hunter orange cap and vest and a 30-06 or a 22 accessorized camouflage or khaki coveralls, which were haute couture. Embraced by leafless limbs, I succumbed to raw pine, nude earth, decaying summer incense, overwhelming any opium or obsession. The moving stillness of the forest calls primordial meditation, deep and foraging as tree roots. The kick of a rifle or shotgun massaging my shoulder was a reality check as I reveled in latent danger. Now this is the other hunting. And it's entitled The Huntress. In shift of day, skyscraper groves cast shadows over street and subway underbrush as the huntress activated her sudden sweet female equipment, using an arsenal of erotic scents plus a knapsack of prophylactic supplies. She artlessly sniped Billy D's and chocolate Denzel's and chocolate Wesley bodies from cocktail to cock's crow hour. To avoid capture by her prey, loyalty did not tip the arrow she let fly to make her best shot. I am going to conclude my reading there on that great note. It's been a pleasure being here with you at Duff's, and I want to thank Michael, and I want to thank River Styx for inviting me. And thank you for being so patient.